Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for this morning is Riley v. Callaway. We'll hear from Mr. Reina.
Good morning, Your Honors. Brian Reina for Spencer Riley. May it please the Court. Your Honors, this is a simple case where the State Appellate Court unreasonably applied the collateral estoppel analysis set forth by the Supreme Court in Ash v. Swenson, a case the Appellate Court failed to even cite. The rule from Ash is straightforward. The State may not relitigate an issue that has necessarily been resolved by one trier of fact in front of another trier of fact and hope for a different result. But that's exactly what happened here. The State presented three eyewitnesses to a jury in an attempt to prove that Spencer Riley was the person who personally discharged the gun that caused Cedric Hudson's death. The jury received an identification instruction, and both parties argued that the only issue was the credibility of the eyewitness identification testimony.
So this is one of those situations, though, where it depends what's found, because if the jury had answered a special interrogatory to the effect that he never even possessed the gun, then logically he couldn't have discharged it either. But what the jury finds instead is that during the commission of the offense, he discharges it, but it's possible to possess without, it's possible that you might or might not have discharged it and you possess it all along. So at this point, it's the possession that matters.
Well, Your Honor, the only question for the jury was whether Riley was the person that possessed and discharged the gun.
Well, they say discharge. The question, as I remember, says discharge.
Yes,
right?
The special verdict was about discharge.
Right.
But the subsequent prosecution at the Armed Habitual Criminal Trial was not about possession of some gun. It was about possession of the same gun used by the murderer at the time of the shooting.
No, I understand that. But what I'm saying is the prosecution, the jury says, has not proven, that during the commission of the offense, he personally discharged the firearm. If that same jury had been asked, but was he nevertheless holding a firearm, it might consistently have said yes, because you can hold a firearm that you don't discharge.
Well, Your Honor, I would argue that analysis is not consistent with Ash, that advises to look at the evidence in a practical framework to determine what the jury rationally decided. What we know here, just as in Ash, is that there was no issue of intent or whether there was a murder occurred. So we know whoever possessed that gun shot the victim. There can be no possession separate from discharge in this case, particularly where at the second trial, all the evidence was, again, that Spencer Riley approached the decedent and shot him.
Well, I mean, the district judge here sees a couple of possibilities where the two are consistent, and certainly for collateral estoppel, it really does have to be the identical issue.
Yes,
and I'm going to comment just parenthetically. It really doesn't matter whether the state court cited Ash or not. I mean, we are obviously not grading their opinions.
Right. It does have to be the identical issue, and the issue here is the identification of the person who approached the decedent and shot him.
And so, if it's possible to have possessed, maybe there was another gun, or maybe somebody else shot, there are just other possibilities out there.
Well, Your Honor, the trial judge at the Armed Habitual Criminal Trial could not have found that Spencer Riley was the person that possessed that gun based on the evidence without necessarily finding he discharged it.
Why is that?
Because that's all of the evidence. Both of the identification witnesses at the Armed Habitual Criminal Trial testified, just as they did at the first trial, that Spencer Riley approached and shot the victim. And this is actually the closing arguments at the Armed Habitual Criminal Trial by the prosecutor. And Frederick Brown sees Spencer Riley shoot Cedric Hudson, also known as G-Lo. He's 20 feet away. There's streetlights in the alley. Semi-automatic weapon. Allen pulled out a semi-automatic weapon and testified, and he pulled out a semi-automatic weapon and shot Hudson. So the issue of whether he was the shooter was exactly what was being litigated again at the armed habitual criminal trial. And the fact that the appellate court didn't cite Ash, I understand they're not being graded, but it does, I think, evidence a that they didn't pay a whole lot of attention necessarily to the controlling Supreme Court case that dictates the type of analysis that they're supposed to apply.
Well, okay, I'm just looking at the district court's opinion. This is page 1920, and that's where she's really coming to the ultimate conclusion that the necessarily decided facts are that Hudson is murdered and Riley did not do it. And then she notes that defense counsel itself offers other reasons for reasonable doubt. No physical evidence, more than one gun, head is the actual murderer, inconsistency, and on and on. I mean, I'm sure you know this part of the opinion. And it just seems to me that is something we need to grapple with on habeas review.
Your Honor, if the jury believed any of that, it only helps my argument because it means they rejected the identification testimony. What the in Ash, the court found basically the same thing, that there was not there was a robbery and that the defendant was not the person involved. And that was enough to preclude retrying the issue of his identity as a robber.
Well,
and it's the same
right, because
here.
In Ash they think that it was established in the first case he's not even there. He's not the robber. And so person number one, person number two, person number three, and so forth, you can't just keep retrying the same thing when the fundamental issue has been decided. But that's what I'm having trouble seeing, other than the two issues the district court identifies.
Well, the fundamental issue here is the identity of this person, the identity of the only person who
is the shooter
and possessor of the gun that Mr. Riley was convicted of having possessed at the time of the shooting.
Okay.
If there are no further questions, Your Honor, I would save my time for rebuttal.
Certainly, that's fine. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. McLeish?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel, I'm Assistant Attorney General Brian McLeish on behalf of the respondent. And the first and most important point, perhaps, is that Ash and this court's precedent in Fifault say the parties may not relitigate an ultimate issue in the second trial. And an ultimate issue is an issue or a fact that must be found beyond a reasonable doubt at the second trial. And the only fact that had to be found beyond a reasonable doubt at the second trial was whether he possessed a gun, not whether he discharged it, not whether his discharge actually killed the victim.
Are you sure that's the Illinois law of issue preclusion, though? The Supreme Court has frowned on the distinction between subsidiary facts and ultimate facts. They say facts are facts. And if a particular fact, if you know, for example, from a special interrogatory answered by a jury that a fact has been found, the modern law of issue preclusion suggests that you regard that as resolved between the parties.
Correct, Your Honor. It doesn't have to be an ultimate fact in the first trial. It does have to be an ultimate fact in the second trial.
Why?
So, because as petitioner is arguing, you know, he wants to preclude the fact that petitioner was the murderer. And that is not the issue in the second trial. The reason the state presented the evidence in the second trial of what petitioner did with the gun is because it would have been bizarre for the state to present, you know, these witnesses to come up and say, I saw petitioner, he had a gun, the end.
Trial is all about that, armed career criminal.
Correct.
Right.
Yes, but there is some context needed, and the state certainly is allowed to present the context of how he possessed the gun. And this court in...
So does the state ever try to reconcile that special interrogatory by the jury that he didn't discharge the weapon? Do they ever try to find another gun?
It's not that he didn't discharge the weapon. It's that he didn't discharge the weapon in the commission of a murder. And as the, you know, defense counsel...
But the guy was murdered, so somebody...
The guy was murdered, and someone did it. But defense counsel's first point in closing argument was there might have been two guns on this scene. He cited the police officer's testimony for that. And not just the police officer's testimony, but we have the physical evidence. So we know that, you know,
One of them has an aluminum jacket, is that right?
Correct. Yeah, and and if you look at the physical evidence combined with Allen's transcribed statement... So Allen says the first shot, the victim is turning around, the shooter was behind him. the victim was turning around and shot, and Allen thought he got shot in the face. And there's only one bullet found anywhere near the face, and that is the aluminum jacket bullet found in his shoulder, which was not a fatal shot. Head and Brown didn't see, Head saw one shot, Brown saw zero shots. They both ran. Allen said he saw that shot, and then he turned to run, and he actually saw Petitioner shoot two more times, but not at the victim. He said, these shots went past my face. So he was still shooting up, and then he ran. No one saw Petitioner or anyone else fire any more shots at the victim. And so then the victim went face first onto the ground, and the remaining, the copper jacket bullets, were all found rear entry through the back, and those were the fatal shots.
So we have no evidence that some mysterious person came up after all these other people run away?
Defense counsel did not present any alternative suspect except for potentially Head, but we know this was
How about the state, though? I mean,
the state had no interest in presenting these alternative experts potential shooters, because the state was trying to prove him guilty of murder. And so the state's argument at the first trial certainly was he was the only shooter. And defense counsel's argument is you can't be sure of that because of this physical evidence. Mm-hmm. And the defense counsel didn't argue, but the jury certainly rationally could have concluded, based on the eyewitness testimony, that everybody only saw one shot at the victim. They ran. Then we have these other bullets.
So the jury. So your theory of this is it all holds together because the jury's finding is just that he doesn't fire the fatal shot.
That is one
theory. But that he does have a gun, which leads to the armed career criminal.
That is one possibility that the jury could have acquitted on, that would have led to reasonable doubt in the first trial without finding that he didn't have a gun. The district courts notes some more. The state appellate court notes a few more that overlap with the district courts. And, you know, just the possibility of two guns is enough for the jury to find reasonable doubt. And there certainly was evidence, there was enough for the jury to have reasonable doubt about mm-hmm. the possibility of two guns. And so, yes, yeah, so that's the only fact that the second jury had to find. And the first jury didn't find the contrary, and therefore collateral estoppel does not.
The district judge says, to determine whether the defendant possessed a weapon to sustain a conviction for being an HAHC, the trier of fact would not need to determine whether the defendant discharged a weapon or if he killed Hudson.
Correct. Right? Yeah. So perhaps the defendant discharged a weapon, didn't kill him. Perhaps the defendant had a gun, and the jury credited the eyewitnesses that petitioner had a gun but didn't discharge it. Either of those are possible. Either of those are enough for reasonable doubt, and he still then would have.
But he would still be an armed habitual criminal if he had the gun, period.
Correct, Your Honor. Yeah. So unless this court has further questions, we ask that this court affirm the judgment of the district court.
All right. Thank you very much. Anything further, Mr. Rana?
Just briefly, Your Honor. Ash does not ask us to guess what the jury thought happened that night. The only issue that was in front of the jury was the identity of that person. Spencer Riley has been in prison for about a decade.
The identity of the killer, right?
Of the possessor of the murder weapon. The identity of that person. And my client has been in prison for a decade because a judge disagreed with the jury about whether he was that person. It would have been irrational for the jury to acquit based on intent, another issue, intent or a lack of a corpus delicti. We know that. The only issue was identity. Was Spencer Riley this person that possessed and shot the gun? The jury said no. The armed habitual criminal judge disagreed and said yes, even made a comment saying that he thought Spencer discharged the gun that night. Your Honors, I would ask that you reverse the district court's decision.
All right. Thank you very much. We will take the case under advisement.